Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we'll be talking about flooded crops. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at an antibiotic-free avian E. coli treatment. Egg History Minute, we'll talk the history of the National Ice Cream Sundae Day. Cool Beans, That's Corny, with some current events, and we'll wrap things up with Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. I don't want to jinx it, but I think we've had like
more than two days,
multiple days in a row of no rain. It's still really wet out there, but we haven't gotten new rain. Other than I did see, I think it was last night, the Shawano area had a random blip over it, just getting hammered. But
yep,
at least it's scattered and not everywhere, I guess.
And Monday there was some of that too, where some scattered downpours.
We were standing in a shed in De Pere, and all of a sudden we couldn't hear each other because of how hard it was raining.
It just doesn't stop. It feels like it hits the point where it's... So now you're right, Matt. You don't feel like you want to jinx it, but it sort of feel like it's... There's little bit of less here. Now it's so humid that you're going to have these random pop-up little showers and areas, and it seems like the weathermen are just putting in 40 to 50% chances because something could pop up.
We should roll some tape from last year, and we're probably the total opposite, right?
Yeah, I would say.
Like, could we get any rain here?
They would tease us with a chance of rain, and now this year it's like, meh.
They're teasing us with a chance of sun.
Of sun, yeah. Of non-rain.
And we've had wet and dry years, and I don't know that last year was record dry, but this year's record wet. So it's like to really flip that switch and how it's done that is just
the hard part
crazy.
With this. What I've been telling guys this year is like, you know, last year we could do anything and go anywhere whenever we wanted, right?
It may not have worked.
Yeah, that was going to say. Right, we could do it. That was my next sentence. It may not have worked. This year, like, things are working pretty good. We just can't
sometimes
get out there and do it. Yeah. Like I've been looking at the same, like you said, Todd, soybean field, and I've needed to spray it for 2 weeks now, and it's like, yep, it's just about dry, and then boom, we get another 3/4 inch of rain or 1.5 inches. It seems like a lot of inch and a quarter, 1.5 inches this year.
Yeah. Yep, just over 1 inch or right around there, and enough to keep you out for days, not just like, okay, you know, it was only a couple tenths, we'll be out for a day or two and then fine.
And then you get the random Manawa City that
gets
5 or 6 inches.
Yeah, confirmed like 6 inches there in a very short time. That, man, that's a lot of rain.
I was there yesterday, and they think now that the current is undermining the dam itself, because the dam didn't break. It was the buffer or the berm next to it.
It's a good point. Like, the dam was still standing. It was the...
So now, supposedly, no confirmation of that, but just the rumor I heard was that they think it's starting to eat away underneath the base of the dam.
Sure.
So the dam may go away itself.
Well, they're going to have to do something with it regardless, but at this point, yeah, they may have more to do the longer it goes on. And there's still boiling water over there. You know, they're all the sewage backed up in a lot of basements, besides the flooding aspect of itself. So it's a mess over there.
Yeah, that's always the hard. It's the day after you hear about it, and then you got weeks of cleanup and different things you got to do. And some people aren't affected at all, and some people are great. You know, you have a whole bunch of damage that...
Right there.
Yeah.
I know they were taking down some trees that they worried were going to fall
in
and then cause more issues by having them flow down river and cause problems. So, feel bad for those folks over there. A lot of work ahead to fix that situation. And I can't imagine. I'm glad I don't live in a that close to a body of water that could flood into, like, Little Henry, even at the fullest I've ever seen it, I don't think it's going to take out any chunk of the city here, but...
No, we don't have a dam in Seymour somewhere. Just waiting to go. But that was such a freak thing, too, to get that much rain, to get that. Even, technically, the dam didn't fail, like you said.
Right. Matt. It was the berm that washed out. But, yeah, no, it's... Even with the river, too, you wonder if it was enough to kind of eat away and change somehow how it'll flow.
Right. I did hear the swell wasn't really as big as they thought it could be, you know, that...
Yeah, I think there's a few things that helped. The Muckwa Swamp was really full, so I think that might have taken some of the water.
Sure, and what you're saying before that, actually that wasn't as full as you thought it would be. I didn't even think of Muckwa down.
I think there were certain areas that took some of the water better, and probably because really, if you follow the Little Wolf, it's going to go to the Wolf. It could go all the way down like Poygan,
right? Those areas they said that wasn't a big tsunami wave coming down,
right?
The Little Wolf to the Wolf, and maybe that way too, it happened high enough up from all that, and those areas are a lot bigger,
right? Yeah, the Wolf River, compared to how it is up here, when you get down to Winneconne, is actually pretty big. So it could probably take that kind of...
Well, it's like going through the Dells or Portage and hitting the Fox, you know, get down south where the Fox River goes through.
Yep.
Some of those cities, it's like, that's the Fox River? It's like 10 feet wide. And right. Then you get up here and it's
huge. Yeah. Huge.
Yeah, that's what... That you bring up the Dells and that. Remember when Lake Dalton?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was in like 2008. And yeah, just how much water is in there compared to in Manawa was very different. Just watching houses float away on Lake Dalton than just how bad it was. And yeah, it's a little different. I mean, Manawa could have been bad, but just the amount of water those two got, I didn't look it up, but they got to be way different. As far as one's a lake.
Right, it's a mill pond.
And one's
versus
a pond.
A,
yeah. Yep.
But still, yeah. I don't think it matters to the people that.
No, it just live doesn't right mean there. You didn't.
I was just going to say that. Ask the people that are right there and are boiling their drinking water.
And even that, just like your house maybe float away, that from an insurance standpoint might be better than your whole house being flooded and then it's just
telling you to try to fix it.
Right.
Yeah, versus. Right. Okay, good luck.
Yeah.
If we can find your house.
Yeah, right.
We'll bring it back.
You know, I have a houseboat.
Yes.
And not the way you wanted it.
No.
Did you see that Death Valley was like scorching?
Yeah, they're experiencing extreme heat. And it was a motorcyclist, I think, died.
Yeah.
Out there.
Just drive while riding his motorcycle? Like
I did not see the whole story, so I'd be lying if I knew the exact details, but I just saw that it was so hot out there that either he didn't have enough water with him or something, and it caused his death. But it's pretty dang warm out there. They said 130 degrees during the day, so...
These days in Wisconsin, we've talked about it's the humidity, it's not the heat, obviously, but some of the wind has been very helpful at times, and there's been days this week, though, there's like no wind at all, which for sprayer guys is great, but it still feels like just dead air out there, and then there's times where it's a little breezy, which is nice. Breezy and in the shade, it wasn't too bad, actually, but...
They were saying that like it could break records of what Death Valley has recorded in the past.
Yeah, it was 128 degrees for the weekend, I think I saw here. Yeah. A high of 128 degrees Fahrenheit was recorded over the weekend at Death Valley National Park, where one visitor died, another was hospitalized. There were 6 motorcyclists in total, and 4 were treated at the scene. of the event. So, yeah, at least we haven't seen that kind of heat, but the next, they're calling for 90s, I think, by the end of the
Sunday
weekend here, so.
Probably glad your fair is over.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fairs going on right now.
Well, and really, other than a few days, this will be probably the longest hot stretch we've had all summer coming up here.
Yeah. No, it's been, I don't want to say mild summer, but it's been warmish, but not yeah, like a string of days like
we've
this.
We've seen 80 degrees, but I don't, have we seen 90?
Not 90s, no.
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 So if we hit 90, that'll be the, I mean, we got close. I think we were at like 88 or something back in late May, early June, but yeah, it'll be a warm one this week. Hopefully that'll lead to some drying out and some
cornfields,
corn growth, and
still a lot of sad looking fields out there. At least in our neck of the woods,
there's a lot of both. There's some where you're
judging by corn price. I don't think the rest of the country is seeing that, but
right.
Well, yeah, when you look at the outlooks and stuff, it's, we're kind of in that dip. Our area is kind of alone in the above average when you get into the upper Midwest here. So,
not that it matters to us, but have you looked at the drought monitor?
What drought?
Well, like I heard on coming in this morning that the Carolinas are really dry.
They were dry, but then the hurricane, some of that went through,
sure,
kind of helped alleviate, but I think they're still very dry. You know, it wasn't enough to sort of flip that switch or anything like that. But that is what's odd about this year, too, is you got people, and droughts and floods kind of,
right,
that can happen that way, is obviously like certain areas are just tracking more rain and other areas aren't getting it. And yeah, talking to Jeff Plinsky, just texted him yesterday actually about, he said it's been very dry in North Carolina, like very, very dry. And then they got a little bit of needed rain.
Yeah,
so,
looking at his area, he's in a D0 or D1.
Okay, so just the start.
There are parts of D2 for North Carolina, even towards the
Coast there.
The coast, yeah, which you wouldn't think, but
yeah, they got that big body of water.
Kinda,
but
it's really big.
Just a little. All right, well, since we're on the topic of water, we should get into our main topic for today, and that's flooding in fields, even if it's just areas. How long can your crops survive? And that is a very good question. So, Bill, what are we looking at here?
It's not long. That's what I'm looking at.
They don't have little snorkels on.
No, they don't.
We haven't figured that genetic part out yet. Like,
obviously, we all have really good corn places, right? I mean, I've scouted fields that corn's over my head.
Yeah.
And corn that's
barely over your ankle.
Not even to my ankle. Biggest thing with this is just, that was a couple of the questions I've been getting is, okay, we've got these fields that are, you know, 12, 6 inches, whatever that height is. And we get the 6 inches of rain that Manawa got, or, and maybe that's a little extreme, but even like Appleton in that storm last week got, you know, 2 or 3 inches or whatever it was. And so you got fields that are going to have ponding issues in it. And it's like, well, it looks like crap already, and now we got all this rain. Are those areas just going to drown out? And the interesting part is temperature has a lot to do with it.
That is interesting, Bill, because I didn't know that. I just expected it to be a duration of flood.
Right, exactly.
Not necessarily a temperature around that.
And it's all, like, 77 seems to be like this.
It's the magic number?
It's a number, yeah. So corn, prior to the sixth leaf stage, if it's underwater for, it will survive underwater for 4 days, which is crazy, if the air temperature is less than 77. So that was what I was talking about. And hard part is, right, it doesn't just stay 77. It comes up and down. So I'm sure there's some variability in that number too. And then conversely, if it's above that number, 77, same, you know, if you still have that same six leaf corn, when it's warmer, like today, it's already probably 70. We only are going to get 24 hours. So I've kind of been, that's kind of what I've been telling people is, you know, you got a day or two. And it's all about water infiltration, right? It's when we talk anything, erosion, soil loss, all that, it's the more infiltration we can get, the better. And this is no different. And obviously in certain fields, you just can't, you can't tile, you can't, whatever you can't do, it's going to pond. So you're in trouble there.
I mean, even at the 4 days, I've seen water standing in fields for longer than that. So it doesn't stay the same size. I mean, it's shrinking over those 4 days, but you know, the epicenter of that low spot is probably toast no matter what.
And that's a good point, Matt. I'm coming into the office here the last 4 days, drive by a couple fields, and it's like, okay, Monday the pond was this big, and now by Wednesday you can see a few more corn rows, so maybe those rows are going to survive. But we know that, you know, well, I drove by it today and it's still 3/4 full. Okay, well, that probably what's there now is done.
And that has been the, like we said, it's been somewhat more mild summer, so that we've had probably a better chance of survival up until this
before
week.
Before now, yes.
So,
What is unique about this year is some of these areas, they drown out already, and then we replanted them.
Right.
So yeah. I was in a field yesterday where I had corn that was V8, which, like it talks about, over V6 is going to be less susceptible to the drown out. And then I had stuff that was V4, and it was all under saturated soils again. And a lot of our replant needs to be replanted. We're not going to, obviously. Right. But now all of a sudden, of that...
July 12th, you're not?
All that... That's the hardest part with the replant, is the weather. It's worth it. And, man, you talked to me 6 weeks ago, and I even had a farmer say, like, are you sure this is worth doing? You know, it was a 10-acre piece. It's a new field for us. So we didn't really know the history of where the water sits exactly and how it's going to be. But I was like, yeah, there's a significant area there that we're going to have weed control problems. We're going to have, you know, just the problems of not having a crop there to do things we need, like I said, especially the weed control part right in the middle of the field. I think it was still worth our time to try. There's going to be some margin areas that didn't drown out, so you're going to have areas that'll make it more, but it is always hard when you replant areas and then they drown out again, and what do you do? But like this says, some of those just, they didn't get a chance to get up and going again. They were only V2 to V4, and it just wasn't big enough to survive it. And like you just said, Matt, now it's warmer, so it has even less chance of surviving. So right. That's kind of a unique circumstance.
Well, and two, when you get to this part here, it says, you know, the more susceptible from V6 and younger, then the older is better. It's all relative. I had a farmer that I was talking to, and he's like, yeah, as long as we're talking about how rainy it is. He's like, yeah, as long as the water stays in the ditch where it's supposed to be and not doesn't flood into the field. Like he remembered a year where corn was tasseling and it flooded long enough that it killed tasseling corn. So it's relative. I mean, it has a better chance, but there's still potential if you get that wet. So it's good to, it feels good to be beyond that in a lot of these fields, that the early fields that are bigger, but and it looks like we're getting drier, but there's certainly still opportunities for things to happen. So we gotta keep stay positive as much as we can. But
and that six leaf stage basically is kind of that trigger where the growing point still could be below the ground. So once we get that growing point above the ground, that helps us out a little bit, and that's where that six leaf kind of stage comes into play.
Sure.
When we're talking about you know, prior to, after, you know, or after sixth leaf, why it can probably survive a little bit longer.
So that's a good point, Bill, is depth of water
right.
matters. That, you know, if you got a foot deep of water and you're V8, it's still probably the same as being right. an inch deep at right. V6. So,
yeah. yep.
so it can just withstand probably deeper water for longer, and as it gets bigger and can handle that. That is one struggle with a year like this that, you know, when it rains, it pours, all those sayings where it just seems like it keeps piling up. But some of these later planted fields, some of them did okay, but there was always these little sections there of plantings that aren't doing very well. And there is one of them in mid-June that now is just getting pounded. You know, and it kind of struggled because it got a lot of rain right after planting, and then now it's been saturated for just too long that it's struggling as well.
And I'm also curious how long a slug can survive underwater, because they seem to be hanging out. Yeah. It's not just the water itself. It's also the added things of this wetter year's bringing on different pests. And so there's a lot of stresses that can be affecting these plants.
How much do you guys think, like, this later planted corn that the root system isn't as developed as some of the nice green tall, is how much do you think it's just lack of oxygen in the soil?
Oh, a lot.
Right?
I mean, yeah. No, I think that, like, flooding, it isn't the water.
Right.
It wouldn't be the same, like, the water doesn't, just like a human, the water doesn't kill us. It's the lack of oxygen.
Right, it's lack of something else.
That kills
you. Right.
And
yeah, so, we're 70% water.
Yes, right. We need the water. The plants need the water. They just also need oxygen. And when you fill that pore space up with water, push out the oxygen, we have problems.
And that was the other question. Like, you take in PSNTs, the pre-sidrous nitrate, and they're coming back decently high, and the farmers are like, how can that be? The corn is yellow. And it's like, well, we can't get to it.
You can't get it, yeah.
You know, all those pore spaces filled.
I've had PSNT years where, and again, there's some PSNT years where they're very hard to get to correlate, or they don't make sense with what you're seeing. But Bill, you take a lot of them and you've seen them, and my crew takes enough too. And I actually saw sometimes it didn't make sense, but most of the time they actually did correlate that way, that, you know, that it would tell you, like, if it's green, you know, there was nitrogen there like you said, didn't even do it some tissues and corresponding with them. And they were helpful that way.
I actually had one farm we resampled yesterday. They went to the lab, so I don't know the results, but we sampled a week ago. And this farm is never low, like, and it's not that they don't, they basically, it's just manure and rotation, and that's what they do. And we really don't have a problem with our PSNTs. It's normal manure rates, nothing out of whack, but there's a little smaller acreage, and all the corn looked crappy, but it's been raining again. Same concept. Is it just the waterlogged soils? But the PSNTs came back low, and I'm like, this is really weird. So I'll be curious. They should be back today, you know, if they change or not. The corn looks better than it did last week, so.
Yeah, I thought there's always that nitrogen day where stuff all
right.
converts.
Yep. Right.
And I thought it was the 4th of July, which should have been a Thursday of last week. But then as the day went on, I'm like, this isn't the day. And then Monday, so it would have been July 8th. Jake called me that morning and was like, this is the day. Today's the day. And then the more they went on, I'm like, yeah, he is right. I think that, so it will be interesting what those PSNTs show, Bill, because it does seem that right. we've reached the time where things have mineralized.
I had a farmer tell me that July 5th was the day of the mosquito, same concept. Oh. He's like we can never go out and have a bonfire, you know, normally, and not have mosquitoes, and they're out July 4th. He's like, I was sitting there talking to my son-in-law, and he's like, where are the mosquitoes? And they're like, I don't know. And then they must have had a fire.
As soon as the sun went down, they...
They must have. So that was on the 4th, and then the 5th they had one. And then like, oh, there they are. So the day of mineralization was the 8th, and the day of mosquito was the 5th.
I actually saw a meme, was it yesterday or the day before? And it was referring to houseplants, but it kind of pertains here as... I don't know if you guys have ever done it, or your wives have ever done it, where you take a plant, like a cutting of a plant, and you put it in water to get it to get roots so you could transplant it. Certain plants you can do that with. And it was a plant in water like doing just fine, and then a plant in soil with too much water, and it was like, dang. Oh, I'm dead. So yeah, it very much is that, and even when this dries out, though, some of these fields are going to, that soil is just going to tighten up.
It's going to tighten,
yeah,
right.
And even then, whether the nitrogen is mineralized or not, it may not still be able to take up that nitrogen the way it should.
No, that's the advantage of sand and disadvantage of a clay soil, that you're right, Matt. You're going to have, as that water does recede, you're going to have problems, and all of a sudden that it turns to like a clay pot.
Yep, concrete.
It turns that way, and I've had guys ask, you know, where corn is small enough and we could cultivate. We had a field in particular that, you know, the PSNT was actually kind of in the middle, you know, where it wasn't, so it came back at an 18. So you're not high, not low, right. And the corn looked really bad. And so then we said, we should try to cultivate to get it. We just need it more air in that soil. Obviously, it's been too wet, but potentially very soon here they're going to be able to cultivate. So, having corn, though, that's short enough to do that in July is rare. But where those fields are struggling that bad, that could be a solution.
Yeah, and you can tell even the late plant stuff that's struggling, because I got one farm where there's corn that's decently tall, and the other stuff that hasn't grown in like 2 weeks that's staying short, that you can really, really see that struggle in those areas where it's like, yep, just watch all the corn around it and see how it grows. But so we've covered a lot of corn. What about soybeans? How long can soybeans last? Yeah,
soybeans are similar, with obviously the growing point being above the ground right away. That whole V stage or whatever really probably doesn't come into play at all. So, you know, our friend Sean doing some digging, and our friend Sean in UW had a paper he published talking about 48 to 96 hours when it's underground. And he said the same thing. Air temperature is a factor. He also added that basically whether it's cloudy or sunny matters too. High temperatures, a lot of sun actually speeds up plant respiration.
Okay.
So we're depleting oxygen, increasing carbon dioxide. So obviously if the plant can't do what it's supposed to do, because, you know, maybe some of it's above water, some of it's below water, that's going to affect how long it can survive too. So
interesting.
Maybe we want to continue the cloudy days until the water recedes. But at the same point, we want the sunshine to
dry things out.
Dry things out.
And, yeah.
So
yeah, that's interesting that your cloudiness is helping in some ways, but there's one thing, this flooding's been equal opportunity, soybean fields, corn fields. I mean, hopefully now if we do get a continued dry stretch, I was concerned about wheat harvest too coming up here with what a lot of these fields are.
Are we going to be baling straw in combine ruts again?
Right.
Is that 19 when we were doing that?
Sure, 19, yes. And 20,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
No, what's out with the wheat, too, is that was holding out, looking really good. And then all of a sudden, you know, these last batches of rain kind of around the 4th of July seem to be that some of those wetter areas got way worse, where it just, which the rest of the wheat fields look very good. So hopefully we can get these off with not too much of a problem. But
right.
it did seem like it finally had just, Like what you guys said about that tassel corn dying before. I mean, to have fully grown wheat that's struggling that bad now is odd. But
that and the potential for weeds down in that canopy too. The one thing with all this moisture is the weed competition. Not that it's not still a bad thing, but when you've got all this extra moisture, it's not like it's thieving from the plants, but as these wheat plants continue to senesce and you've got moisture in there, I've started to see, especially in the thin spots, getting really weedy down in there. So that could affect harvest too if we've got all this green kind of tangle to deal with, as well as the wet field.
I think going back to the soybeans part, one thing too I'm noticing this week with the saturated soils we had is the nodules on the bean plant struggling. So different from corn, where beans, you also have a nitrogen-fixing bacteria right on that root that also needs, you know, certain conditions to survive. And it does seem like what I can't tell yet is did a lot of those nodules actually like die inside? Because you squeeze them and they're not just fully brown yet, but they're like a real light brown, but they're not the pink. And then I was in a bean field yesterday where they had like littler, so they had like big nodules and those were struggling, but then there was a bunch of little nodules, looked like they were just starting, and those were all pink. So it seemed like that whole system maybe had to do like a reboot or something like that. Or, you know, had a bit of a problem. So that's one struggle too, is with soybeans. It's maybe a little different with corn. You know, it does seem like those are able to work, but there's certain conditions where those might be something. If you have a tough looking bean field, you check your nodules and see how they're doing.
Yeah.
Are SCN good swimmers? Can we at least take that, them out? Would be nice.
I'll take it.
A lot of times that's your worst areas, is those low areas in a field. So
right,
be nice if they would drown out too. But all right, well there you go. There's some ways to look at your potentially flooded crops, is how long they might survive, and signs to look for as we move into the later part of the season. Now we'll go into our spotlight for today. So Purdue University has developed an antibiotic-free avian E. coli treatment. So that avian pathogenic E. coli, or APEC, can be a tough issue to deal with. And Paul Ebner and his team have developed a bacteriophage treatment that effectively reduces APEC colonization in treated chickens. Treatment contains multiple bacteriophages, which are viruses that infect and replicate only on bacterial cells. Ebner is the interim head and a professor of the Department of Animal Sciences. He said the goal of the project was to create technologies that could reduce the use of antibiotics in animals raised for food in low and middle income countries. So APEC is often controlled through antibiotics, but the continued emergence of antibiotic resistance has led several countries and regions to prohibit many types of previously approved antibiotic treatments in poultry production. We believe the use of our treatment, along with a good flock management, can significantly reduce the need for antibiotics in maintaining bird health. He also disclosed that the bacteriophage APEC treatments to the Purdue Innovates Office of Technology Commercialization, which has applied for a patent from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for Intellectual Property. So there you go. That's a different way of treating something that attacks the E. coli itself, as opposed to having to treat with antibiotics, which is, as we all know, a very big point of discussion in animal agriculture. So now let's move into our Ag History Minute. National Ice Cream Sundae Day, which sounds funny because you say Sundae Day, is celebrated on July 8th every year and can bring fun and sweet celebrations to ice cream sundae lovers across the country. The history of National Ice Cream Sundae Day comes from the original ice cream sundae, which was consisting of a vanilla ice cream topped with strawberry-flavored sauce, whipped cream, and a maraschino cherry. Originally served in a small glass, tulip-shaped vase, this glass then got the name the Sundae Glass, and over the years it took many forms and shapes. They've become one of the most popular desserts in America. Interestingly, there are two versions of the story of who is the original creator of the sundae.
I know which one I want. Want to be the truest.
The key players in the list include Two Rivers, Wisconsin, and Ithaca, New York. Evanston, Illinois, and Plainfield, Illinois, but according to most people, it was Two Rivers that was the original birthplace of the sundae. It was invented by Edward C. Benners, the owner of Benners Soda Fountain, in 1881. Much like the origin, there are varied stories of how the Sunday got its name. One story claims the name comes from the translation of Sonntag, which means Sunday in German. Another story says that in Evanston, Illinois, when they passed the Blue Law restricting soda on Sundays, the town invented the term Sunday soda, which later turned into Sunday. But whatever the origin is, or whatever the name you use, one thing is absolutely sure: how much we love Sundays. So grab one today. And that's interesting that New York, Illinois, and Wisconsin are involved there, because isn't there a claim for the hamburger, which Seymour being the home of the hamburger? Wasn't there one in New York,
yes,
too?
Yes, Hamburg, New York.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's...
these competing things, yes, with New York for some reason.
Like, we invented it. They're like, whatever, we did. What's your favorite topping on a Sunday, Matt?
I like some hot fudge.
Yeah, hot fudge is good on a Sunday. I don't think there's a bad one. That's one good. I mean, some people may not like butterscotch or caramel, maybe.
I was always a fan of the banana split, too, where you get like strawberry and chocolate and then
pineapple
in the middle with the bananas.
The bananas splitting it, yeah.
Which I know is not a...
Is that considered a Sunday?
It's probably not a Sunday, but it's a split. Maybe we should do the history of that one. I'm curious. Yeah, whose idea was it to split the banana and put ice cream in the middle?
Right. Like probably somebody, like some Quick Trip that had all these extra bananas and didn't know what to do with almost rotten bananas.
Right.
So
take half of one, throw it away.
Secret history of Quick Trip. There's actually Quick Trips in the 1800s. Just weren't called Quick Trips.
Well, good. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's really easy. All they need to do is go to Apple Podcasts, or on your Android phone, download an app like Podcast Addict, and you can search Tilth Talk Radio. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthegg.com/podcasts. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll do some Cool Beans That's Corny and some current events. So Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week: the 2024 Wisconsin State Fair Dairy Products Contest winners have been selected. So dairy manufacturers from throughout the state have submitted over 460 entries for the 2024 Wisconsin State Fair Dairy Products Contest, which took place June 20th at Wisconsin State Fair Park. The contest featured over 50 classes for cheese, sour cream, butter, yogurt, milk, and custard. 2024 Grand Master Cheese Maker, Grand Champion Butter, Grand Champion Yogurt, Grand Champion Sour Cream, Grand Champion Milk, and Grand Champion Custard will be announced at the Blue Ribbon Dairy Products Auction on Thursday, August 8th at Wisconsin State Fair Park. The Blue Ribbon Dairy Products Auction is a fundraiser for the Wisconsin State Fair Dairy Promotion Board. Auction proceeds fund scholarships for students pursuing dairy-related degrees and support the board's interactive education display, Dairy Lane, located in the lower barn at Wisconsin State Fair Park. First place entries in each class include a number of... I'm not going to read this whole list, but
there's like 50 different things there, 100 different things there.
Yep. There's a string cheese from Little Chute, Wyawega and Agripure cheese are in there for feta. You've got smoked cheese from Agripure and Luxembourg.
If you scroll down, Matt, there's a lot of Graves.
Open class. There's
Graves
a whole bunch
there,
of Graves.
A handful of time.
LeClaire Dairy for goat cheese.
Lamer's Dairy for chocolate milk.
The two
Guernsey girls for whole milk, whole chocolate milk and whole white milk. Yeah, so that's good luck, I guess, to all those looking to be named Grandmaster and Grand Champion. We'll find out in a little less than a month when State Fair has the auction, so very cool. All right, that's corny this week. Grain prices are hitting lowest levels since 2020. The falling U.S. grain prices could mean significant financial losses for producing corn and soybeans in 2024, according to University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin on social media platform X. So I think this is not a surprise to any of us in this room. We know it's been, things have been trending lower, especially with corn. So the Bloomberg Grain Subindex, which tracks futures for corn, soybeans, and wheat in Chicago and Kansas, has extended this year's losses to 17%, trading at the lowest level since December 2020. It's the worst performance among main commodity groups, with energy and metal indexes rising in 2024. It's a stark reversal from the post-pandemic rally that grain prices more than doubling through 2022, fueling food inflation across the globe. And in addition, speculators entered July with their most bearish ever mid-year views on Chicago corn and soybeans, and prices have touched lowest levels since 2020 as supply fears have all but vanished. So, yeah, could mean losses for farms. If you don't have the ability to store, you know, it really, whatever the harvest market is, that's kind of where you're stuck. So, and that's something that I think we see a lot here that isn't in other Corn Belt states, is on-farm storage just isn't as robust in our state as it is other places. So,
yeah, prices are, this is always tough of when you're getting beat by a tough year, which shouldn't, obviously in some places maybe isn't beaten down as bad, but certain places are. And then you kind of have the, I think this seemed to be just feeling out in the countryside, like we were already getting beaten up in 2024, you know, in May and June, and kind of everybody's heads were hung a little bit. And then you had a second to look up and look at the grain prices. And then it was sort of the dagger a bit where you're like, man, this just, it's always hard to produce a crop, and then to produce a crop with lower values, even tougher. So yeah, hopefully some of this can always turn loose. Hopefully people have an okay marketing plan that, you know, you can market through something like this. But there's always those pinch years when you come off of other year, you know, there's those years where, like this year, where input costs are quite high, and then you're going to have, you know, prices potentially quite low, that trying to manage through those years is always difficult. So whatever you can do out there, even to make, you know, we still got a little bit of in-season game to make a few changes. And I know I've been talking to some growers about that, of, you know, with say nitrogen on later planted corn, to be very specific to an example of what do we really want to invest in on certain, like I've got say a grower with really good looking fields and then some poor ones, and the really good ones we're going to actually take and invest in some fungicide and some other things to try to make those do well. And the poorer ones, we're still obviously going to use some nitrogen, but maybe turn the dial down just a little bit. Sure. to sort of look at that. So a lot of things, though, that we can still change throughout the year. That's what I'm getting at here. Yep. Is that it isn't like the game's over. So there's still a few decisions you can make to try to do the best you can to be profitable.
That bottom line a little bit more. Yep. All right, we'll wrap things up then with Field Good Friday. And we've talked about this particular person before on the podcast, but it's been a while. So a Vermont dairy farmer turned into an epic track star, and now she's headed to the Olympics once again. So Ellie Pierre St. Pierre, a Vermont dairy farmer turned track star, has booked her ticket to the Summer Olympics once again. Setting a meet record performance, the Montgomery, Vermont native won the 5,000-meter race at the U.S. Olympic track and field trials in Eugene, Oregon, with a time of 14:40.34, a new trials record. This seals her spot in Team USA, allowing her to compete at the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris later this summer. A former Olympian, she finished 10th in the women's 1,500-meter race at the Tokyo Olympics in 2021. This Olympian has been training to compete for the 2024 season ever since she gave birth to her son Ivan just 1 year ago. So good luck to her, and those Olympics will be on us before I know it. I was just looking to see if they, I don't remember when they start, but I don't think it's too much longer. Paris has been preparing.
It is Friday, July 26th through Sunday, August 11th.
Yep, so yeah, just a couple weeks here, and things will be kicking off in Paris. Hopefully they'll either find a new swimming venue or clean up the Seine River before then, because I know that's been a a big thing in the news. But yeah, good luck to St. Pierre, and hopefully she'll do well. So that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about waterlogged crops and what to expect there. In our spotlight, we took a look at a antibiotic-free avian E. coli treatment for poultry. Ag History Minute, we talked the history of National Ice Cream Sundae Day. Cool Beans this week was the 2024 Wisconsin State Fair Dairy Products Contest winners have been selected. Our That's Corny, it was grain prices hitting the lowest levels since 2020. And our Feel Good Friday, Vermont track star farmer headed to the 2024 Paris Olympics. So thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.